Hey, this is Leanne Womack, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, senores and senoritas. This is your old pal Chris Shiflett, and you're listening to Walking the Floor. Coming to you live from my hotel room in Nashville, Tennessee. Probably most of you folks listening know that we had a very, kind of an odd week, tough week. We had to postpone a few gigs. We're all really bummed about that. But by the time you listen to this podcast, we should be back at it. Can't really go into the details other than what, you know, family emergency situation, just something that could not be helped. And these things happen, and you know, we hate missing shows. And I was running into people this week in Nashville that were like, hey, you know, we came from Arizona. We're so bummed that you're not playing. And I really feel for everybody, but we're going to make those shows up in the not too distant future. And like I said, by the time you hear this, we should be back at it. I've been making the most of my week here, being kind of marooned in Nashville, a town that I really actually enjoy being in. So, you know, it was kind of, if you have to postpone gigs and be stranded somewhere, it's a nice place to be. I have been interviewing everybody that I can get to this week, banking lots and lots of Walking the Floor interviews, some really good ones like Tony Joe White, Kendall Marvel, Alex Williams, just to name a few. I'm going to actually, in just a couple hours, I think I'm going to interview the Brothers Osborne. So that's going to be pretty cool. So I got podcast interviews for days, man. I'm all filled up. I was running low, and now I'm all filled up. And I even got to jump up on stage with Kendall Marvel over at his Honky Tonk Experience thing, the residency he's been doing all year over at the Exit Inn in celebration of the release of his new record that just came out like a week or two ago. And that was really fun. Me and Rami went over there, jammed some tunes with those guys. Some good people over there. Yeah, who was over there? We had, there was Keith Gaddis, there was Steve Gorman from Black Crowes, Brothers Osborne. There's just a bunch of people, of course, Kendall himself, leading the charge, keeping it going. It was really fun, seemed like everybody had a good time, and unfortunately, I gotta leave Nashville tomorrow, so I'll be getting back to work and leaving town, but I got a lot done while I was here, so thank you, Nashville. Okay, let's get on over to everybody's favorite online music retailer. You know it, you love it. It's Zounds.com. It's Zounds. You never have to pay full price all at once. You can split your order total over 4, 6, 8, or 12 monthly payments, whatever best fits your monthly budget. And the best part, the folks that work at Zounds are real musicians. They're not salespeople. They don't work on commission. They just want to get you the best gear that they can for the best price. So get on over to Zounds.com. Okay, let's get to the interview.
Nobody writes good.
All right, so I was lucky enough this week to get to sit down with a bona fide country music legend, Leanne Womack. She's got a brand new album that just came out on Friday. It's called The Lonely, The Lonesome, and The Gone. And I'm sure she was like crazy all week doing the big hustle, setting her record up. So I was pretty excited to get a minute to sit down with her over here at my hotel and just chat about, you know, everything from how she started to, you know, the massive sort of pop crossover country success that she had, to sort of coming back to a rootsier sound that was more like where her heart was at, and just everything you could possibly imagine in between. It was a great talk. I'm going to let her tell you herself. This is Leanne Womack on Walking the Floor.
Is the lonely, the lonesome?
You've done this before, I can tell. all right, so you've got a new record coming out this week, right?
Yep.
Congrats.
Thank you.
I love the title, The Lonely, The Lonesome, and The Gone, because I'm in the middle of a lengthy touring cycle, so I'm all of those things.
All of the above.
All at once. Tell me about your new record. What should people know about it?
Well, I always tell people those are the people I sing for, the lonely, the lonesome, and the gone, sort of. So I grew up in East Texas, and I went back to Houston to record the record, and I just wanted it to reflect my roots there, and it does. It's sort of a mixture. You know, in East Texas, you have everything from George Jones, who's my all-time favorite, and Lefty Frizzell, to like Janis Joplin, Lightnin' Hopkins, Towns Van Zandt. I mean, you know, just some great writers, great soulful singers and stuff, you know. And so I
Rodney
wanted
Crowell's a
Rodney,
Houston
yeah,
boy, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Definitely. So yeah, and I wanted to get a lot of all that in there. And I grew up going to church and singing there. And my dad worked at the country station, so I just got a lot of different kinds of music.
And what was it like working with your husband on this record? He produced this record, right?
Uh-huh.
Have you guys worked together in that capacity before?
Uh-huh.
Is that like a normal thing?
Well, I met Frank, who's from Houston, but I met him in Nashville. He was working, he was my A&R guy.
Oh, okay.
When I got my first record deal at Decca Records.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so we've worked together since then.
Right. Okay, yeah, because I was just imagining, you know, like working with somebody that you know better than anybody else on earth could like have its pros and cons.
I guess it does. I guess.
Somebody that knows you better than anybody but also knows how to push those buttons and you're like.
Well, you know what he told somebody last night? He said the only thing harder than producing a record on your wife is producing a record on your daughter. Because he just made my daughter Aubrey's second record. They just got back from Texas making her record. So we all, it's a family business.
Right, right, right. You know, it's funny. Well, since you mentioned that, I was going to ask you about that. I have three boys myself, and I struggle to get them to, I think maybe, I don't know, because I'm a musician, they all love music, but getting them to like practice their guitar and stuff is a never-ending struggle in my house. So I'm wondering what your parental secret was to getting your daughter involved.
I never said one word.
Really? Well, that's where I'm screwing up. Because I'm the dad that's always like, give me 10 minutes, practice that guitar, strum those chords.
No, I never said anything. I encourage Anna sometimes. Like, Anna went with Frank and Aubrey when they were going to cut Aubrey's new record. And I said, now, next record we go make, it better be yours. I mean, I say things like that, you
right,
know, but
right,
just
right.
to encourage her to work on her own thing.
Yeah. I mean, but how involved do you get in your daughter's career? Like, you know, obviously you're an experienced, you know, artist in this world of the music biz that's difficult to navigate. You know, do you like offer her advice or?
No, because as you know, everybody's career and the steps that they take to get where they are is unique.
Right.
And for one thing, Aubrey and Anna know more about the business than I ever did because they grew up in it.
Right. Plus,
and
it's changed so much.
It has
I find like I'm
so
stuck
much.
In like 1995 music. I don't know if I'm ever going to even really be able to understand it outside of those terms.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm with you. Yeah, yeah. That's why I keep young people around me all the time. But I know I don't give her advice. And plus, she has a manager, you know, and so and a producer. And if I start managing and producing and doing all that kind of stuff, then who's going to be mom, you know? So
right. Sometimes you just need mom.
I mind my place, that's for sure.
I mean, with your new record, where do you sort of see yourself genre-wise nowadays? Do you think of yourself I'm sure in your heart you think of yourself as a country singer, probably first and foremost, but like, you know, in this sort of modern world of like Americana and all these different sort of sub-genres, where do you see yourself in all that?
You know, it's funny. I don't know. I mean, I am a country singer. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
And that's what I always aspired to be. You know, a lot of people really want to do something else, but they end up somewhere. You know, they end up in Nashville. Or they end up, you know, in the country genre. But that was what I wanted to do. And so it's odd for me because this sort of country has sort of been pushed, real country sort of been pushed out. So it kind of pushes you out and where you don't really have a home. But
well, I think of it almost like if somebody has a long enough career in country music, eventually they get called Americana. It seems to be, you know what I mean?
I guess so.
Like
it's
funny, you see it with like whoever, Dwight Yoakam, Ronnie Crowell, all those type of artists, like that seems to be the genre classification for whatever reason.
Yeah, it does. I don't know. I don't like to be classified anyway, really, I don't guess, but I guess what I call myself is a real country singer, and that's what you hear on country radio now is not real country. So, and some of it's great. I'm not putting it down. It's just, but that's what I am. And thank goodness Americana does embrace country.
Well, let's back up a little bit. So you mentioned growing up in East Texas. What was your childhood like?
Well, I knew from the time, I mean, I don't ever remember not wanting to be a country singer. So I was a lonely kid. You know, I didn't really relate to all my friends who thought that, you know, going to the lake and partying and all that kind of stuff was so fun. My life, all I could think was, my life hasn't even started yet. The life I want has not started yet. And they were in the throes of their, you know, the best years of their life, you know. And I was like, I just didn't relate to people very well.
Well, where do you think that came from? How did you know
from
such a young age?
I don't know.
I knew from a very young age, too, that I wanted to be a musician. And I look back on that now, and I'm really grateful, because I see with my kids and with, you know, their friends and stuff, that that's kind of a rarity to know your path so young.
Yes, I think so too. Very rare. But I don't know why. And I've wondered myself too. My parents weren't in the, my dad worked at the radio station.
He was a DJ,
right?
Is that's what turned you on to country music in the first place, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and his record collection at home. So it was like Bob Wills and Ray Price and that kind of Texas shuffles and swing stuff, you know.
Yeah,
and that
was
what he had a lot of at the house. And then at work, you know, it was... of course Willie Nelson, but then Buck Owens and Jones and stuff like that. So just his record collection, I guess, you know. I wasn't exposed. It's so funny because people say, well, obviously you know who so-and-so is, and I'll go, because it wasn't that I wasn't allowed to listen to rock music or anything, but it just wasn't there. It just wasn't there. I just wasn't aware of it.
Yeah.
And so gospel and country was, and not even bluegrass. I didn't get into bluegrass till college. So it was very limited. A little pop, though.
Right.
I had a little bit of pop because my dad on the weekends sometimes would fill in at the pop or AC station.
Right.
So I got a little bit of that, but not a lot of other kinds of music.
I'll make you a mixtape.
You should. I mean, I ask people to do that all
the time. I know all
the
rock stuff. I'll hook you up.
I ask people to do that all the time because and the great thing about it is I'm discovering music. You know how great it is to discover something you love.
It's one of the great things about modern technology that, like, on Apple Music has these playlists that are like, I forget what it's called, like Country Radio 1957. Or it just has the year. So it's basically like the hits from whatever year. You can just go through. It's almost like you're listening to the radio in 1965 or whatever.
Very
so you really get a
cool
sense, like, kind of what was happening. I love it, man.
It's my thing.
Yeah, it goes forever.
I love that.
So when did you start singing?
Well, maybe, you know, like in front, really in front of people and stuff at church.
Right.
Late elementary, you know, junior high-ish age.
And did you have high school bands, anything like that?
I was in the choir in high school the first couple of years, but then it was the same time as cheerleading, so we couldn't do both. But I did a little bit of everything.
Yeah. So when did you start actually, like, performing country music out in front of, like in bars and clubs and that sort of thing?
This just came up the other day, but the first gig I had regularly was at a place called the Loafin' Shed in Tyler, Texas, and I was the girl singer in the band. And that was, I was 17.
Before college? Okay, so you're still in high school.
It was the summer before I left to go to college.
You came to Nashville to go to college, right? Belmont.
Yeah.
Right. So at that point, did you know that was the path you were on? Like, you wanted to be a performer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Always. I knew that. And
right.
I never went to class. It was terrible. But I interned at MCA Records.
Right.
And at the time, Tony Brown was running the A&R department. He had Emery Gordy. He had David Hungate.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Bowen was running the label. And so it was a cool time. But I just hung out at the label all the time. I never went to class. Or anything.
Was that like a master class in the music biz right there?
Oh my gosh. It was
did you get to interact with some of those artists and see how they kind of did what they do?
When I was an intern, it was when Tony was signing, when he signed Lyle Lovett, Steve Earle, Nancy Griffith. It was that whole, the credibility scare. It was that whole time.
The credibility scare.
Steve Earle called it. But yeah, it was that whole time. And so it was a cool time to be there. And Conway Twitty was still on the label, and Strait was making records, and it was just a really, really, Loretta was on the label. It was crazy.
So, but after college, didn't you sort of leave the music biz to start raising a family for a few years?
Well, Yeah. My husband, first husband, Jason Sellers, was a singer and songwriter, and he was out on the road playing bass with Ricky Skaggs. Mm. And so he was gone all the time, and we had Aubrey. And so I just stayed at home with her all the time. And then one day I was just like, I'm not going to get anything done if I just stay at home. So I made a demo and started going around dropping it off places, you know, saying I'll sing demos or whatever. And and started writing songs. And I wrote a song called Am I the Only Thing You've Done Wrong? It's kind of about the fact that I was at home. Jason was the one that was out on the road all the time, you know. And so then I got a writing deal because of that song.
Okay.
It went from there. But yeah, I was at home with her for a couple of years.
What was the songwriting culture in Nashville like at that time versus now? Was it the same sort of thing, like three people in a room doing co-writes, you know, with the sort of scheduled, like, because I have these two different visions of what that was like, having recently read the Guy Clark biography. One is sort of the arty, you know, artist salon, Guy Clark and, you know, Rodney Crowell and Steve Earle and guys like that sitting around trading songs, and the other is the sort of, you know, the 3-hour session, three guys in a room, here's the tempo, here's the subject matter, we got to hit this thing. Which version of that, or what is there some in between, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just curious what it was like, what your experience was like.
Well, I mean, I've written with Dean Dillon at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I've written with Dean Dillon in an office at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know. Right. So but I came right on the end of that whole Hank Cochran, Dean Dillon on a boat, trashed out of their minds, writing the greatest country songs you've ever heard, you know.
Yeah.
That all was just winding down
when
I got to town. And it just started, you know, becoming more corporate, I guess. But I had a kid, so I was writing at my kitchen table.
Right.
You know, with Jason, or Billy Joe Foster was one, a writer from Oklahoma that also played in Ricky's band. And we all would just sit around and write at the house.
Right.
So we didn't have to get a babysitter, and that's kind of the way we did our thing. But it was, that whole cool time was coming to an end, I think, when I got here.
So you got to still kind of see a little bit of it, though?
Well, I got to be friends with all those guys. I mean, I got to be friends and write with Hank Cochran, which
really?
Is genius. I mean, I just can't even believe it. And, of course, still Dean. And
like, what do you take away from something like that? What do you learn from a guy like Hank Cochran?
Well, one of my favorite stories, and this didn't involve me, but I heard the story about when somebody said, well, I don't know. I mean, they had a line. They were like, is that enough? Does that say enough? And Hank goes, well, I don't know. Was make the world go away enough? You know, it's like, it doesn't, you know, it's just, it can be simple, you know, and I.
It's the hardest thing.
The hardest thing. Yeah. That's the thing, is Dean and Hank and all the Red Lane, all those guys, they made everything seem like you could have written it, but when it comes down to it, it's a lot harder than
right. That's the magic trick. The look how simple this is.
But you know, you listen to their songs and you go, God, did they write that about me? Were they watching
it's like
my
they wrote
life?
It about everybody.
Yes. I mean, it's simple enough that it can relate to so many things, and I'm just really proud that, or happy that I got to be around those guys.
And what can we talk a little bit about your writing process specifically? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do when you sit down to write songs?
I prefer to, I get my ideas when I'm, a lot of times when I'm driving on a long road and when everybody else is asleep or when there's nobody else in the car. And it's something about that repetition of the road that just, I get ideas that way. Mm. But also just in life. I mean, you know, like 20 years and two husbands ago, I mean, I just said that one day, you know, and that became a song. So I usually get ideas and write them down, maybe get a verse, write it down, or a chorus, whatever. And then I'm not a very disciplined person, so I end up having to get somebody else to help me finish it. So that's kind of the way I do it.
Yeah. That's funny. I'm in the same way, but it's always right when I'm going to sleep. And then I have that internal battle of like, do I get up and go to my iPhone and record me mumbling some little melody?
And then
if I do that, will it make any sense tomorrow when I listen back?
And
to
does it
me?
Usually?
Sometimes you're like, I don't really know where I was going with that. It always seems like if you don't just kind of like finish the idea when it hits you, that it can get lost.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they say keep a notebook by your bed and you write down all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I've had success both ways.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a very undisciplined songwriter myself. So I think most people are. It's a lie. People say that they are, but I don't know. I have yet to encounter many of them, you know. Anywho, so how did so you get a writing deal? You're doing demos. How did that lead to you getting your own record deal?
Well, when I signed at Sony, which was Tree Publishing at the time, they knew that I sang because they came out to a writer's night and heard me sing "Am I the Only Thing You've Been Wrong?" So they signed me to get a record, to get me a record deal.
Mm.
So I signed there, and then I did a showcase, and Tony Brown and Mark Wright were at the showcase, and you know, it was just real hardcore, straight up country music. Nobody was doing it, and I think they just thought, "Well, we might not make anything out of this, but it'll sure be fun," you know. And
right, right.
That's kind of how I got my record deal.
Well, your first couple records were successful and had a more sort of traditional country sound to them, but the third record was the one that was like massive, right?
Yeah.
How did you deal with that level of fame?
Mm.
I mean, were you ready for it?
No. No way. Especially because of the way it came, because it came as a pop crossover hit and with I Hope You Dance. And yeah. And so people, you know, and I was the girl that was writing and singing "Am I the Only Thing You've Done Wrong" and "Never Again Again," these really hardcore country songs. And all of a sudden I have this like positive message, and I had my kids in the video, and I think that people just thought that I was something maybe that I wasn't. I told people at the time, I think people think I'm Billy Graham and I'm really like more like George Jones. And so it was, I was having to sort of play that role, you know. Not, I really didn't play the role, but I think that's what people wanted.
Right.
So it was difficult for me to navigate those waters in particular.
Yeah.
It wasn't the level of attention as much as it was what people's perception.
Right. Like, what is the business, the country music business do, like your label and your publisher and all that sort of thing, for a young artist to sort of prep you for that kind of success?
Mm.
I mean, do you, like, because I've heard of bands going through, like, media training and, you know, all that sort of...
I had an afternoon of media training.
Right. How'd that go?
Did not go well. Did not. You know, you really... Some people have a natural gift.
Yeah.
I did not. I was a wallflower. I didn't talk to anybody. I wouldn't. It was terrible. And they were, you know, kept trying to help me with it. Meaning the label, hiring people, stuff like that. But I just didn't get good. I didn't get better at it until I did it a bunch.
Right. Was the record you did after that? You had a couple records that were a little more like you know, pop crossover style. But then you did that one. There's More Where That Came From. That was sort of back to your roots,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Was that you sort of clawing back decision-making power, you know, power over your career?
Well, that
or did
was
the label
me.
Go ahead with it? Like, were they happy to go, you know, that you were switching lanes again?
I was really lucky in that they were happy. Well, I had a song called "I'm Gonna Hate Myself in the Morning, But I'm Gonna Love You Tonight," and I think they thought it was a hit, so they were happy to go after it.
After that, there's been some periods where you've like taken time away from the music biz.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Like, what was going on that you needed to step away from it?
Much to the chagrin of managers and stuff at the time, and label and producers and stuff, I always took years off between, because I had kids, and I just always felt like that was my most important job, and I couldn't get that time back. And and having a mom who does what I do, it's one thing to have a dad, I think, but to have a mom, and plus dad's also in the business, you know, I thought it was important for me to be at home a little bit more than the normal person, normal artist. So
like, how do you work that out now? I mean, your kids are older now, so mm-hmm. I guess maybe not as much of a thing, but did you sort of plan your touring around that, like, you know, cutting it down? I know it's like a typical thing in the country music biz to do the sort of weekend warrior thing, mm-hmm, be home mm-hmm. at the beginning part of the week. Is that
right? Well, as far as touring stuff went for me, I kind of just basically made a career out of opening for a couple of guys, George Strait and Alan Jackson. I just kept and Willie Nelson. So I would just kind of go back and forth. And I did.
That's not a bad career choice.
No. Well, you know what? They all took really good care of me, and I got a really good check, and didn't have a lot of the worries and overhead of being the headliner, all that kind of thing. And that was good for me as a mom.
Right.
And part of that time, a single mom. So that was really good for me. And it wasn't until they got older that I started going, okay, well, maybe I should start trying to do my own shows. And so it was really kind of a weird career path. But I mean, that's why at this point I'm so excited about my career, because I have so many new things I'm doing that I never did before.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like at this point starting over.
Right.
In a good way.
Who are you going out with now with your new record coming out? Are you doing your own shows, or are you going to go
doing
package
my
up
own
some other folks?
And also been out with Alan all year, and we'll go back out with him some next year too.
Mm-hmm. So are you at a point in your career, and this is like where I think everybody wants to be, where you can tour without even having a new release out?
Oh, yeah.
Do you just tour kind of all the time?
I don't tour all the time, no. But right. Just because, as I said earlier, I have family and need to be home and stuff. But, yeah, in country, you kind of, it's not like I made a record, I'm going to tour on that record.
Right. Less cyclical.
People do it, all the time. And yeah, so I can.
And nowadays, when you go to make a record, do you feel like, is there less pressure on you? Mm-hmm. Like, is there more freedom for you? Can just go in and do what you want, the way you want to do it, without having a committee of label executives weigh in on it.
Yeah. And I was always lucky, and I try to make sure I always say that in my interviews, because I was always lucky that the people at my label really did. They might have encouraged me to do some things that I wasn't comfortable with, but they were happy for me to cut country things and be myself too. And so I never had to fight too much.
Right.
But now, I mean, my husband's the producer. We just do what we want to do, and that's a lot of fun.
What is that process? Like, how do you decide which songs you're going to do, which songs you're going to write? Or not which songs you're going to write, but which songs out of the ones that you've written you're going to do, and which songs you're going to do from outside writers and that whole thing.
Frank and I just have always just gone through songs, and I throw my own in there, and so it's a process for us. It's not like, okay, it's time to make a record, let's sit down and go through songs. Like, we are constantly listening to songs, listen to what so-and-so wrote, listen to the song I found on this record. So it just is a constant thing, and it has been for 20 years.
And do you have your own studio, like where you record on your own?
Nope. Mm-mm. This last one, we went to Sugar Hill in Houston, which used to be Star Day, which is where Jones cut all of his early stuff. And
Is there any of the gear left in there from those days?
There was
the same board,
a lot
or anything?
Of funk left, and it's a funky place. But we loved it. It was so cool because.
Why does it smell like a possum in here?
We're not really the slick glass and chrome type people, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We love that, and but no, we don't have our own studio. But these days we throw up mics in the living room and record stuff. And
right. Well, that's great. Congrats on your new record.
Thank you.
Thanks a million for coming down and doing this today.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, it was great. Great talking to you.
You too.
I like that shirt.
Thank you. Got a new jukebox.
All right, that was Leanne Womack on Walking the Floor. Make sure you get over to leannewomack.com. Check out her tour dates. She's got a bunch of them stretching out on the horizon. She's got a great brand new album called The Lonely, The Lonesome, and The Gone. Go get it, stream it, buy it, whatever you do, however you get your music, check her out. And that's it for this week. As always, make sure you go to the iTunes store. You can listen to all the old interviews. They're all up there. They're going to be there forever. Leave a comment, leave a review, leave a star rating, 5 stars, of course. When you get done with that, get on over to our Spotify playlist. It's Walking the Floor with Chris Shiflett on Spotify. You can find it. It's got all your favorite songs. Make sure you follow it. We're cooking along, man. Every day, a couple more followers. I love it. We'll catch you next week. Adios, amigos! Watching a Camry, pulling out.
like an old hat.